Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. Today, because we're winding down from the big projects of Dungeons & Dragons, we thought it would be fun to look at a smaller project, about the projects. We'll be discussing D and Dizzle, a role-playing game that fits on a bunch of index cards and is about warriors and knights of old in the merry old land of Comptonia. All that and more on today's System Mastery. I am kidding, there is no more. Welcome back. It's System Mastery.
It is.
I'm Jeff. That's John.
Yes, indeed.
And we...
Or should I say, yes and Dizzle.
Yes and Dizzle. No, I don't think you should.
No, I probably shouldn't.
No. In fact, I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to.
Contractually.
Mm-hmm.
It's in our contract with the One Shot Network. I'm not allowed to say...
It was a weird part of the contract when we finally got it. I mean, the weirdest part was the part where James inadvertently tried to claim all of our t-shirt sales, but I think that was just because he was using a contract he had given to someone else before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little does he know, we have no t-shirt sales.
When we were like, hey man, that's our $2 a month.
Maybe.
Sometimes. Every once in a while. Then he gleefully agreed to change the contract for us because he was so eager to sign us.
So eager to get that hot talent.
So eager to put us on board that it took him like a year to do it.
Yeah.
And then it was like we were bugging him. Anyway, network stuff. How you doing, John?
I'm real sleepy.
Okay, well, can you do
me... We had a big old burgers.
You want to monologue about that for a second? Because I just realized that the power cable fell out of my laptop, but I don't want it to fall apart.
Oh, no. Okay, sure. Let me tell all the folks... all about what's going on today. My dudes and dudettes and non-binaries, we're reading D and Dizzle, and it's on, like, flashcards.
Man, you are real bad at it. Couldn't you have done some crowd work or something?
You're the only one here.
Yeah.
What am I going to do crowd work
with? Not once did you ask me where I was from.
Is it your anniversary, sir?
Yes, it is. It is my anniversary, and that's why I'm here.
Thank you.
Also, would you note that I have I have a chowdery head, please?
Please. I am a chowdered head.
Thank you. That would be great. Thanks. All right. So here we go. The whole game is indeed printed on flashcard type thing. We got it off DriveThruRPG. So each page of the PDF is a 4x6.
Weirdly enough.
It's a fun gimmick. I don't hate it. It looks like the whole company prints all of their games on flashcard size when they print them at all.
That's very strange.
Well, it's because they do small games, and I guess it...
They do small games. For small people.
Yeah, for small folk.
And that's the only people who can buy this.
All these games are for hobbits. We had to rent a copy because we aren't... You have to be at least this short to rent.
That's good, doing this short motion in the podcast so that everyone can see.
Would you quit ruining the magic? I was trying to create an illusion of a world where there was an audience in here that you could do some
theater
crowd work
of
on.
The mind!
But every time you're like, no, we're just in a grubby bedroom. This is how the magic trick works. It's a fake ball, okay?
Anyway, it was in my palm. It's in my other palm. Here it is. Rings are apart. The rings are together. Oh. The rings are apart. Okay?
You are ruining a child's dream. Some child somewhere, probably. So... yeah, I looked at what this company has done, and they've done a lot of games that are like this. They're like, oh, it's this simple engine that we came up with applied to space or cowboys or something like that. This is the first one, and it's mostly just sort of a gag thing. It's just a bunch of jokes with a pretty simple engine bolted to it. And the jokes are all that this is the medieval land of Comptonia, where real OGs prowl the hood. To
fend off the ghetto, because there's monsters and shit, and
you don't want to catch hands, so
you gotta watch out for the royal popo, because maybe they'll catch you round the cul-de-sac, and that's where King Pimperton lives, and sweet mother of God, why?
So, I mean, It's a joke RPG book. We try to avoid these, but this one was nice and short. And I'm going to give it that credit right off the bat. The first thing I want to say about this game is it gets its jokes, it gets out. It's not 800 pages long.
I would not so much like to laud it for that, but for the fact that it very clearly delineates with the font on the text what is someone talking in character about a game and what is actual game rules text.
Oh, yeah. The opening of the book is right in there with that.
If you don't want to read any of the, like, all you bitches need is two dice, motherfucker, then you can just read the rules.
Now, that did make it hard to read the entire book, because it's kind of like when you're trying to read Lord of the Rings and you keep coming across the massive collections of italics.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, geez, I don't want to read the Lay of Baron and Luthien. I just want to get to the part where we get to the mines. Come on already.
But nope.
So every time I'd be like, oh, an ugly font that's hard to read. I'm going to read all of it because I have to.
That's the job.
Because that's the only part of this book that's relevant anyway. The rest of it's just a pretty simple D6 roll for a target number thing. 2D6.
Indeed.
Indeed, sir.
Sir.
Sir, indeed.
Sir, this is a Wendy's drive-in.
Sir, if I may. It's a Tommy's drive-thru, sir.
Sir,
would you like
turn on your monitor.
Would you like horrible chili on anything? I don't even know if that Tommy's that's in our neighborhood is a national chain or not.
I've never
seen another one.
I don't know.
It looks like a national chain. It's just, you know, kind of a crappy fast food joint that serves the most horrible gluey chili on a variety of things. Anyone, it's like worse than Wiener Schnitzel chili.
Oh, yeah. I would take a Wiener Schnitzel chili whatever over anything from Tommy's any day.
But I have no idea if that's relevant to the vast majority of our listeners, because I don't know if there's Tommy's anywhere else.
I don't know.
I don't even know if there's a Tommy's in there. I went in the one time and I was like, ew, oh, ew, no.
I've never been in there. The only food I ever got was when someone brought it back.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, nope.
Pass on this.
This is bad.
Yeah. So anyway.
Anyway.
There are four stats that make up your character in the game of D&Dizzle.
There are.
Is that where you want to start, John? Or do you want to start with more of like the history and the backstory of the world and stuff?
I mean, whatever.
Our narrator for this game is a fellow by the name of Fat Warrior.
Fat Warrior is going to be our constant companion throughout this book.
Yeah,
everything in italics is from his point of view.
He has opinions on just about everything in the game.
Yeah, Fat Warrior is, well, the, like, barely done pencil sketch of him is basically like if you gave Fat Albert some football pads.
Yeah, if Fat Albert lost 40 pounds, got some football pads, and was still carrying around a chicken wing.
Let's not say a chicken wing. That is a turkey leg.
Fine. He's carrying around one of them fair, like county fair turkey legs. And he just has generic opinions on everything in the book. But he starts the book off by telling you the basics of the world you should be getting ready to experience.
Diving into the world of Comptonia.
Comptonia. So what's going on in Comptonia? It's basically your standard village for like a medieval village called the Ghetto, which is full of jokes.
Yeah, the whole background it gives is there's like a king. And it's King,
current king is
Sammy.
Okay, we're doing the background.
Yeah, so King Sammy is the old king, and he was a good king, and he took care of the folks in the ghetto, and he cared about them. But then his son took over, King Smokey, and King Smokey only cared about one thing, and that was getting high.
Yeah, he loved to blaze it, old school. Although this book seems really a little worried about just saying the names of drugs. Because you never see the name. It's always just, oh, it's a secret stash. That's where he kept his materials that he would use to get high.
Oh, man. He's got a secret stash in the big-ass forest.
The big-ass forest. That's where he keeps its secret stash. Did King Smokey. But King Smokey didn't care about the people and didn't do a good job taking care of them.
So the kingdom went to crap, and then up came King Pimperton.
So King Pimperton is real OG from the ghetto area of Comptonia who kept it real and was super hard.
And he came up from the streets and then took over.
Yeah, he took over, which honestly is kind of an interesting parable to discuss in the first place. This guy is, he's from the streets. He has he understands street justice, and he knows about how snitches get stitches and all that stuff. But now he's in command of an infinite army of royal popo soldiers.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see in the italics of this, like, as the book goes on, it's struggling to continue with the whole, like, yeah, pimps are cool and getting money is the real motherfucking deal. And then also it's like, yeah, and also he's the king and he has the royal popo and they'll come out and they don't care about you or the ghetto.
They'll beat your ass.
All that they care about is protecting him first, then the cul-de-sac, which is where the castle is.
Right.
And then maybe if they got time, they'll look in over there.
Yeah. So he's got himself a police force, which is a exceedingly corrupt police force that is just endless waves of dudes who will try to kill you.
It's like, I understand, because it's trying to split between, like, I want the king to be a cool pimp and also, hey, fuck the police. And it's very hard to watch the gymnastics this game does to try and get both of those at the same time.
For the most part, it just doesn't. It's just like, oh, he gets to live in a cool castle and have a pretty daughter and send people on adventures and stuff. But also, if you fuck around with his stuff, he'll send wave after wave of policemen at you. And you're like, wait, hold on. Why would he even have policemen? Wouldn't that go against the street code he had growing up?
Yeah, wouldn't he instead rely on the true OGs of the ghetto?
Also, is he in fact a pimp, or is he just named Pimperton?
Well, if you look at the picture of him, he is indeed dressed as an old school 70s blaxploitation pimp.
I'll be honest, I do kind of, that's the art in this book is heartfelt.
I thought you were gonna say childish.
The art on this book belongs on the fridge.
It really does. It is very much like, I'm doing scribbles.
Yeah, so, but I really like the idea they have of giving him a pimp crown that has the big tiger brim.
Giant brim. Yeah.
Yeah, the big brim, and then there's also a crown. That was kind of fun to see. I like that.
The book is oddly aggressive in some parts where it talks about, like, oh, he has a daughter named Fabula, and fuck you, he can name his daughter Fabula if he wants. You can go fuck yourself. And I'm like, who cares?
I wasn't upset that he called her Fabula. Whatever, that's fine.
Why are you getting so up in my business about this?
Calm down, Fat Warrior.
Whoa, hey.
Hey.
Whoa.
Fat Warrior.
Jeez.
Hey, hey, hey. I'm coming to your house if you got a problem with this.
It's so weird. I don't
That was a weird part, yeah. So anyway, Pimperton's got a daughter, Fabula. She's one of the sexiest women in all the kingdom. Boy, is she ever banging. But one time, a big-ass dragon, the big black dragon, came and kidnapped her.
And that's when the whole thing fell apart. Pimperton used to be a good king, but when the dragon took his daughter away, he got obsessed with finding her and
hired
popo all over the place.
He sent his popo everywhere, but also he posted bounties that were like, hey, bring back my daughter, and you can straight marry her.
I will give you my daughter's hand in marriage if you bring her back. And I do like that the thing in this book is, while some adventurers were fighting the dragon at one point, she just snuck out and left.
Yeah.
And then she got super pissed off when she saw the posters saying that. She's like, fuck you, you can't give me away as a prize.
Yeah, she got mad about it and has retreated to the big-ass forest to live in hiding in open rebellion of her father as Robin Hood.
Robin in the hood.
In the hood. Because, you see, she robs the rich parts of the hood to provide for the poor parts of the hood.
You see.
Also, she has a friend, Big Joe, who is her constant companion who fights with a quarterstaff.
And I don't... Whatever.
Everything's fine. I mean, that's one of the lamer gags in the book, but whatever. It's fine. She's Robin Da Hood or whatever.
Yep. Certainly is.
Yep. And she lives out there and is actually Princess Fabula. Would you believe that?
My goodness.
I mean, yes. It's one of the five NPCs that has a name, so yes, I would.
Now, the the person in charge of the game, your DM, is the BP, or Big Pimp.
Mm-hmm. And player characters are OGs, or original gangstas.
Indeed.
Now, the stated intent of the game is to basically pay homage to 80s and 90s kind of...
Hip-hop culture.
I feel like it honestly plays a lot more heed to 70s and 80s blaxploitation pimp culture.
It really does, because there's... I mean, there are some references to, like, 90s rap songs and things like that.
Yeah, sure.
But the actual, like... in-game things like, what's this? Oh, it's a crazy hoe, and
yeah,
you got the pimp snake that what owns her, and you're like, what?
Yeah, it all feels like the villains in particular feel retrograde, like they were pulled up from the 70s, which is an interesting choice. And plus, there's the you occasionally get a joke that references like Snoop Dogg or something, but for every time you get that, you get two or three more that are about like the Saints Row video games or Sonic the Hedgehog or Hogwarts.
It's very weird.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind it. Honestly, it's kind of like if a little chunk of our own show had been written just out in I dialect, the Fat Warrior parts. And you know, I dialect, that just means like written in like accent. Because a lot of the same jokes that we would normally do. Shit about Hogwarts being stupid because wizards don't make sense for the following reasons, that kind of thing. It's weirdly disconnected from the intent. There's things about this book I like. The part where it's like, hey, we're going to start, the first sentence we're going to put in this book is, we strongly condemn sexism and homophobia. If you see anything like that, this book, then let us
see,
know.
The problem I have with it is,
I know.
Look, language visualizations or themes of that sort were purposefully avoided. If you feel this book will encourage those sorts of things in you, please don't purchase it.
I guess that, yeah, fair enough.
Like, hey, if this book is going to enhance your idea of some racial stereotypes, don't buy it. It's not our fault. We're just going to swing our arms, and if you get hit, that's your own fault.
It's on you if you interpret this book in a way that makes you more transphobic.
This isn't for you, critics.
I'm just going to throw this transphobia out here, and then you are free to interpret it however you wish. Death of the author.
Anyway, so yeah, there are some classes you can be that all one-to-one line up to some Dungeons & Dragons stuff.
Yeah, basically you get the core four. You get your fighter, your rogue, your cleric, and your wizard.
I mean, I'll just go down.
No.
You've got your doc.
I said no.
Which is your cleric.
I reject this.
I reject your reality and substitute my own.
Very good.
You've got freestylers, which are the bards.
Mm-hmm.
Jackers are the rogues.
Yep.
Street magicians are your wizards.
Yeah.
It's weird that they went with that. Like, you got to do David Blaine shit, apparently.
Well, I don't know what they were going to do otherwise. I mean, that's the problem, is wizards didn't really fit into the blaxploitation genre they were trying to shoot for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even clerics don't really. They had to go with street docs.
Yeah, it's just docs.
Yeah, not normally a part of the genre either, but, you know, they had to fit these things in.
And then thugs are your fighters, and trigger man is your ranger.
Yeah, I don't want you to think it's a ranger. It is one for one with the fighter in terms of what it gets. It's just that it uses ranged weapons instead of melee weapons. There's nothing in there about how it's good with nature or tracking or anything.
No.
It's just a ranged variation on the fighter.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Like, when you first see it, you're like, ah, ranger, right, because it uses crossbows and gets bonuses to crossbows. But that is where it ends.
That is where it ends. Now, I will say this.
And no more.
All of the stats and skills in the game are rated from 1 to 3. 3 is the maximum. So you have a very easily predictable curve, because
yes,
everything is 2d6 plus stat and skill.
Mm-hmm.
So the most you could ever have is a plus 6.
Yeah.
And the lowest you can have is a minus 1, I believe, if you're untrained.
Yeah, I think so. I think you can stack other minus 1s. Like, some of the weapons are inaccurate, for example, and give you an additional minus 1. Like, if you're trying to hit a guy with a garbage can lid and you're not trained in garbage can lid, you're probably rolling 2d6 minus 2.
So, you got that. There's the four stats, like Jeff mentioned.
Yeah. Brains, brawn.
Brains, agility, might, and soul.
Brains, agility, might, and soul.
And It says you get 7 points to spend on the four of them, but you have to put 1 point in each of them. So really, you have points to spend.
And you can't put more than three in any given stat. So you have 3 points to distribute, and you can't put them all in one place.
So what you have is a three in whatever your main class stat is, and then a two in something.
Yes. Or if you feel like really spreading it out, you can have a two in, two in a couple of things.
But
you wouldn't do that, though. So just in case you were curious. Yeah, those are the classes. They all go to level 7. Each time they gain a level, they gain very simple abilities.
Yeah, there's every other level, starting at, I believe, 2, is you get another ability point.
Mm-hmm.
Every level, starting at 2, is you get another skill point.
Yes.
And then I think every other level, starting at 1, you get some abilities.
Yes, that's the way it works.
Yeah.
So if you're a spellcaster, if you're a doc or a street magician, at each level, you gain 2 new spells. No, it's odd level.
Odd level.
At each odd level, you gain 2 new spells, each of which you can cast up to 3 times a day.
And they are used like slots. So if I've got, you know, 2 level 1 spells, I can cast each of them 3 times a day, or I could just cast one of them 6 times if I wanted to.
I didn't even know that. I thought they were restricted.
Nope.
Okay.
And
which is good, because every time you see 2 spells, and it's only 2 spells. There's not a list to choose from. You get these 2 spells at each level.
You get the level, you get those 2 spells.
When you read them, you're like, oh, that's the good one, and that's the useless one. Every time. Every single time.
And you can trade, I think, up if you want, but like, if I use a level 1 spell and use a level 2 spell slot for it, it's not like I get 2 casts out of it. I just have to use that spell slot.
Right. So and even then, that's probably going to work in your favor, because a few of the spells are just obvious enemy shutdown attacks. They're just things like, ah, you can't go next turn, monster.
Yeah, which, the fact that you're like, what do you do? My turn is you don't take a turn. Yay.
Great. Good thing there's 3 more of us. This is going to be a fun combat.
Yeah, but if you're like, oh, we're fighting like 10 zombies. Goons. This is bad. This is a bad spell.
It's bad if you're fighting a bunch of things, but it makes it so that you can't fight bosses in this game. That's kind of a problem. If you ever fight a solo opponent, you're just like, because here's the thing. The spellcaster will eventually stop being able to do it. The bard, one of their abilities, I think they get it at level 2, is I forget what it's called. Battle rap.
Yeah, rap battle.
Rap battle is you target an opponent with this. They can't do anything on their next action.
Yeah, you just spend an action to deny their next action. That's it.
Uh-huh. And there's no limit to the number of times you can do that, and there's no roll to hit with it. So if you want to just be like, all right, we're fighting a giant monster, it will never do anything. You 3 beat it to death.
Yay.
That's a thing you can do. I'm sure basically you're supposed to fix it with the DM being like, hey, guys. I'm sorry, the BP being like, hey, guys, don't do that. Don't use your class ability because it was not given a cap.
There's sort of a lot of stuff that doesn't seem like they really cared to think too much about it, because they were like, whatever, it's a joke game, we don't need this to be balanced.
Yeah, that's
true. So there are things in there that you're like, this is bad?
Yeah, pretty much.
There's a weird thing for me where the game also has a couple things where it contradicts itself, specifically initiative.
Mm-hmm.
So it has, under initiative, that normally you would have an initiative rating, and your initiative rating would just be your agility plus something.
It's a skill. I forget which one.
Yeah.
Awareness or something.
Agility plus awareness. And that is your base initiative, and you don't roll anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you go down past the skills and get to the combat section, it says you instead roll 2d6 plus awareness, and that's what your initiative is.
Yeah. Well,
and if you go to the monster section, the monsters all have an initiative rating.
Yes. So they use the initiative rating system, but are they adding that to a 2d6, or what are we doing here?
Yeah, I'm like, well,
I mean, to be fair, as long as you're either rolling a 2d6 or not, it doesn't actually do much to the math. Like, if you're like, my initiative is 5 and that monster's initiative 6, the only difference that adding 2d6 is, okay, now occasionally I'll go first instead of I can't go first.
I mean, the big thing is it makes agility less important, because 2d6 plus awareness means anyone can put points in awareness,
mm-hmm.
and it's fine. But if you're just agility and awareness, it means the agility classes just go first, which I guess is what they were going for.
Fair enough, yeah. There's other things I'm still not completely sure of. The Jacker, for example, is this game's thief. They get, like, a lot of their abilities are nebulous. They get, like, oh, I can backstab if I'm behind a target. How do I get behind a target? Eh. And if they're, their maximum, the highest level one they get ability is now you can go into stealth and combat, but there was nothing in the otherwise in the game that said you couldn't.
Yeah.
Or how you would.
The skills section in this is especially bad at the this is just a comedy game and we don't need to care, because the mechanic is 2d6 plus stat and skill. There's no chart that gives you an idea of what difficulty ratings should be.
No.
So there's no guideline for, like, oh, if you want someone to be able to, I don't know, find their way around in the big-ass forest, that's a navigation roll, and your difficulty should be 9.
Yeah.
They don't say anything like that. So for anyone who's coming to this game, you're like, if I don't know probabilities or anything, I'm just going to have to start making numbers up out of my ass, and who knows if that's going to be good or not.
Yeah, 2d6 plus a range of about 1 to 6 is the same curve as, like, Iron Kingdom's role-playing games, so I've kind of got an instinctive sense that the average base difficulty should be about a 12, but...
But then, most of the things they show in the game are much lower than that.
Yes.
So, instead of an armor class, you have your defense rating.
Yes, yeah.
And your defense rating, everyone has 5 plus agility plus armor.
Mm-hmm.
Armor at max goes up to plus 4.
Plus 4, yes.
And of course, none of your stats can go above 3, so you get a plus 3 at max there.
So that's a 7 plus, so it means...
So 8 plus
yeah.
4.
4 plus 3 plus, plus the maximum of your skill is another 3, which means you can get as high as of 10.
It's 5. It's not skill. It's 5 plus agility plus armor.
Oh, okay. 5 plus agility plus armor. So 5 plus 3 plus 4 for a total of a 12.
12 is the highest you can get.
Yeah, and if you have...
And, yeah, if you have one of the skills that or magic items, you can magic up your armor and give it a plus 1 armor.
Yeah, and you can also increase your defense against ranged attacks by carrying one of the weapons that's also a shield. So you can get into the 13-14 range by applying tricks to yourself. But even then, like, if you're saying, all right, I'm rolling 2d6, and because I'm not an idiot, I took 3 in my combat skill, and I have a maximum stat in my primary ability, so I'm rolling 2d6 plus 6, my average roll is a 13?
Yeah, your average roll
12.5, 13.
Beats higher than you can get to start the game.
Yes.
And it seems a little goofy that that's the case, because... That's the only thing, like I said, we don't have a chart for difficulty. The defense rating is really the only, like, numbers-based thing we really can go on.
Yeah, there's no part where it's like, hey, what's the average skill for, like, finding a deer in the forest or something? You just kind of have to assume that the DM will figure it out.
Yeah, there is a sample adventure in the back, and I think throughout the entire thing, there is one roll for a skill that is mentioned, and it's at difficulty 10, and that's it.
Yeah, which you're very rarely going to miss. You have to roll a 4 or less than a 4 on your 2d6 to miss that skill in most situations.
Well, if you're maxed on the skill.
But why wouldn't you be is the problem.
Well, you only have a couple, because this isn't combat is what I'm saying.
Right. No,
skills.
No, that's true. Yeah, fair enough. All right. So there's a few things you'll start to notice as you're building your way through. There's not a lot of choices you can make, so it's mostly just kind of fun. But certain spells are just ludicrously better than others, so once you find the good one, you're just going to stick with it. Like the level 1 Street Magician spell is a choice between one that takes a monster's turn away or one that does a d6 damage.
And that take a monster's turn away or a d6 damage will eventually not matter because... They get like, oh, this spell does 2d6 now, or this spell does 3d6.
Yeah.
So they just sort of get better versions of it, whereas a lot of other people just get different things.
The spells get powerful. Like, there's no weapon in this game that does more than a d6. So d6 plus 2 or 3 is usually, I think, a d6 plus 9 is as high as you can go as a fighter. Because one of the thug abilities is you double your contribution to damage from your might ability. So since you're playing a thug, you're going to have set your might at 3, which means you'd be adding 3 damage to your damage roll. But now you're adding 6. And there are a few weapons, the biggest swords and so on, that already add 3 on their own. So you're looking at a d6 plus 9
yeah,
kind of as your damage cap.
The heaviest one you can get is a nail bat for D6 plus 4.
Okay, there you have it. So 10.
Yeah.
D6 plus 10 is as high as you're going. Wizards can get up into the 2 and 3D6 range, but they can't build their bonus quite as high. So they do more variable damage.
Yeah.
Freestylers, their basic ability isn't to attack things, but rather to establish a battle rhythm. When they do this, everyone gets plus 1 to hit and plus 1 to damage. As long as they're within like 15 feet of the battle or of the freestyler.
Man,
this is bad.
I hate that it basically went with like a third ed version of a bard. Was like, what do? Oh, you sit there and sing and everyone else plays the game.
It goes like an EverQuest version of the bard where you literally stand there and sing.
Oh, yeah. Because your first ability is drop a beat and you give plus 1 to attack and damage to everyone, but you can't do anything else while dropping a beat.
Yes.
Then you get the rap battle so you can not take an action so they don't take an action. So again, your skill is either I don't do anything and everyone else gets better, I don't do anything and that thing doesn't do anything. You get a plus 5 to knowledge rolls
mm-hmm.
as another one. And then the last one is you can do an action to try and make everyone in earshot roll a brains roll difficulty 5 or lose their next action. So you can do an AoE, lose their next action, but it's 2d6 plus brains difficulty 5. So that's a bad ability. The freestyler is just
it's a lackluster.
Bad.
Even that first ability, the one where it's like, hey, everyone within 15 feet of me gets plus 1 to hit and does plus 1 damage, that is mathematically worse than just swinging with a stick yourself.
Yeah, if you're like, hey, I just have a stick, it does a d6 damage, who cares? It's minus 1 to strike, but
the accuracy in this game is huge, so giving everyone plus 1 to hit is really not that big of a deal.
No. The plus 1 to damage is like, oh, I could give, if I have 3 other people in the team and they all hit, which they basically will, mm-hmm. that's plus 3 damage, or I could swing and get plus D6 plus my might score in damage.
Yeah, and pretty much guarantee that I'm hitting for more damage than I handed to everybody else.
Yeah.
Which is... Yeah, Freestyler was not well designed. It's a bad choice.
No.
There's also some weird questions that come up from the Freestyler. One of the things that they are carrying in their starting equipment, their, what is it called,
starting shit,
is a lo-fi mic, which is the weapon they use for their bardic abilities. It doesn't say what it does. It's not a weapon. It's in the item section, and it says, basically, Freestylers need this to use their abilities, and it can be used to deal feedback damage, 1 feedback damage to everyone in a 10-foot radius, but it doesn't say how or what kind of action that is or if you roll for it or anything. It just says it's just listed under the item that you can use that to deal a point of feedback. We don't know.
The problem is it doesn't say use an action to deal 1 damage to a 10-foot area around them. It just says it amplifies the voice times 2 and can cause feedback to deal 1 damage to a 10-foot area around them.
We also don't know what amplifying the voice times 2 is. I mean, I guess it
Well, the hi-fi mic amplifies the voice times 3.
But we don't know does that mean that it goes your voice goes farther? Does it increase the range of your abilities?
Well,
what are
given
we doing?
That they didn't say what voice range is, and one of the freestyler's ability is opponents within earshot, it would be nice to know what earshot is.
Yeah, it feels, I mean, sure, it's a joke book and it's a little one at that, but it seems like it's missing some important connective tissue.
Yeah, there's a lot of bits in here where you're like, you just didn't come back to this later, did you?
No, they made decisions and stuck with them. I mean, again, we talked about this before we started the review today, but the threads you begin the game with, because it, like we were saying, you start with some starting shit in the game.
Everyone starts out with generally a set of armor, a weapon of some kind, usually either a stick or if you're the freestyler, a lo-fi mic,
mm-hmm.
A swag bag, which is your adventuring gear. It's like a tent and a bedroll and whatnot.
Super basic.
And then everyone starts with whack threads.
So whack threads implies that your character begins the game dressed very poorly, with threads that are not impressive and actually impose a minus 1 on any socialized skill rolls you make during the game.
Indeed. Now, the problem with that is when you go to the item section, there's whack threads and it's minus 1. There is no regular threads?
There's no regular threads. It goes from whack threads to, I think it's fly threads. which give you a plus one to socialize, and that's it.
Yeah, which, Banging Threads is banging the other one. There we go.
Banging Threads, yeah. So if you have Banging Threads, which costs 50 gold, then you get a plus one to all your socialized rolls. If you have Whack Threads, you get a minus one. There's no middle ground, which means, and there's no rules for anything else in the game.
Yeah,
which,
given that it says that you start with Whack Threads and that's an item, you're like, I don't wear them.
I don't wear them. I am naked because naked does not have a socialized penalty associated with it.
I will rather run around the ghetto dick in the breeze then put on these Whack Threads and everyone will like me better for it.
They'll like you a small amount more because you're naked, which, you know, it's true in life. You're always happy to see a random naked person running around, just running around. Just like, hey, I'm naked for no reason. You're like, yeah, you go, buddy. I'm not going to adjust my socialized role based on the way I feel about your current nudity.
There's also some plain language stuff in some of the spells, like the dock gets purity, and purity removes any negative effects.
That's all it says.
It doesn't tell you what a negative effect is.
Yeah. I mean, it's useful, though, because when you go to the game's medicine skill, like in the skill section, the medicine skill comes with a little description from Fat Warrior, where he's like, hey, yo, sometimes yo get busted up in yo shit with bullets or whatever, and the street doc's the a friend in need, and the time hits you like that. And what does it do? You can roll it to determine how many hit points a person is currently missing from their total, and that's it.
Yeah.
You can't fix it. You can't stabilize unconscious people. You can use it to determine how many hit points a person is supposed to have and how many they have right now.
And you can use it on an unwilling target, which increases the difficulty to 12. So you can be like, hey, how many hit points does this guy have left? You can sort of make a roll to do that.
So it's just the scan spell in Final Fantasy in addition to the basic thing? Because the basic version of it is worthless, because you'd be like, well,
yeah, for a willing target, it's just difficulty 8 to do the same thing.
Why is there a difficulty at all? If you're like, I'm going to examine the fighter, see how many hit points he has left. I have 7. Oh, right. Open information. I forgot.
Oh, yeah. He can just tell me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, now the heal skill doing literally nothing but showing what the hit point value is real weird and bad.
It doesn't do it. You can't use it to heal people. And because there's nothing in this game about how your hit points are hidden secret information, 90% of the time it doesn't do anything at all.
Which is unfortunate, because the way skills work for points is every class starts with 4 skills that they have 1 rank in.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a number of points equal to your brain's stat to put into other skills,
yes,
if you want to. So, you know, as long as your brain stat is 2, you can max out at least your combat skill right from the start or something.
Yes.
The problem with that is the doc starts with heal, and since it doesn't do anything, you basically have a wasted point.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad. I mean, it's the same thing like, oh, I have the crafting skill. What can crafting do? Oh, it just says you can craft stuff.
Yeah, there's a thing for it. Crafting is a skill in and of itself, but also street magicians get a craft magic item ability, which does more useful stuff.
Well, yeah, because that lets you get something and actually enchant it, and any item, there are only weapon, armor, and trinket slots.
Yeah.
Each one can have 1 magical effect on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a list for each slot what you can put on anything there.
Yes.
So it'll be like, oh, this can get like +1 armor or +1 to a skill or whatever.
Right. So and that makes the spellcaster in the game particularly valuable, because he can shore up everyone's equipment. There's no limit to the number of things that the spellcaster can create. It just says that when he does it, it costs half the value of a magic weapon to do that. And then that's it, which means you could theoretically retire your wizard after you hit the level where you can make magic items and after you've like geared out your squad.
Yeah.
But, you know, why would you do that? That's not in the spirit of the game. Then they get into there's a whole like history of the world section where it like breaks down a little map. You live in the ghetto, which is a walled off section of kind of tenements. That is adjacent to the city dump, which has become where monsters live.
Yeah, the Black Dragon went over there, dug out a cave in the mountain of garbage,
and started summoning monsters from places.
Yeah, so now the entire dump is full of monsters that have been leaking out both into the forest, and there's a fence around the ghetto, and they've been like climbing over the fence.
Yes. Now, all the monsters in this game, except for the dragon himself, are summoned. It's specifically, if they're any kind of monster that's not a human, they are a summoned monster. And that's because the doc has the ability, I believe it is, to banish them for a while.
Yep.
He
basically has the abjure ability.
Yeah, or turn undead, whatever you want to call it. It can fire them back to their home dimension, and they can't come back for 48 hours. Although, thing is, if you're like, I abjure the goblin, oh no, I can't summon that goblin back? What a sad story.
Yeah. I mean, at least it's a spell that for any summoned monster is an auto kill.
Yeah,
essentially.
And seeing as how all the monsters are summoned, it's a hell of a deal. Well, all the ones that aren't like transformed humans and stuff. So the next thing you learn about is the big ass the road, the long road, which is a 5 mile walk.
Yeah, it's a 5 mile road.
The 5 mile road, which is a 5 mile walk from the ghetto to the cul-de-sac. The cul-de-sac is where rich people live, and it all goes through the big ass forest.
Yep. And the big ass forest, you better stay on that road, because there's wolves and bears and shit in there, as well as OGs that have turned bad and have become bandits.
Mm-hmm. Those bad OGs, which sometimes become regular bandits and sometimes turn into, like, rat people.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, there's Hood Rat is a
monster type.
A monster, and it's the black dragon turned an OG into a rat dude.
Yeah, because that rat dude sold out to the black dragon, and in reward, he was turned into a rat man.
Yeah.
The monsters in this game are more or less the last thing we really need to talk about, and they are a repository of tropes.
So, I want to go, before we get into that, let me get into the black dragon itself.
Sure, let's talk about he's one of the monsters. I'm willing to accept this.
Before we get into the horrible tropey ones, there's the black dragon. And, you know, this is supposed to be, like, the big boss of the game. I mean, it has a defense rating of 16, so you'll finally actually be using your stat skill to its max.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe you'll even need that plus one from dropping a beat.
You might actually miss. Get to the next thing, please.
Well, his 500 hit points.
There it is. That's the next thing.
And his claws do D6 plus 20 damage.
So, here's the thing. Your character has a number of hit points equal to their
hit points per level.
Hit points per level, which is like the highest one, I think, is the warrior.
Seven.
At seven.
Yeah.
And then at first level, you add your, is it brawn bonus?
Your might.
Might bonus. You add your might bonus to them. So, if you have a might of three, if you're a warrior, you'll have 10 hit points. Each level, you add your hit points per level again.
Yep.
So
you're going to get to at max 52 hit points at seventh level.
That's the absolute best you can do,
which means you can take two hits from the black dragon.
Uh-huh. And that's if you're the biggest, beefiest warrior.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, however, you're still at that level. You're still swinging at him for maximum, I'm assuming, a magic weapon and a bonus, a D6 plus 12. So you're going to have to hit him a lot.
Yeah.
That said, you don't need to worry about it because he's just a monster. So if you bring your freestyler along, he will never do anything to you at all.
Yeah. There's nothing that says that the black dragon is unaffected by spells.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have anything in particular that stops stuff from working. So all you do is walk in there. Your freestyler is like, hey, dragon, even if you get initiative on us,
you'll get initiative once.
You will hit someone for a D6 plus 20. That'll suck, and then you'll never do anything, and we will very slowly kill you.
Yep. You won't even be able to go away, because moving in this game is your action. You can tell that because one of the thug abilities you get is you can move and attack this round.
Oh, no. You get a free move, but running is... If you want to move and move again.
It's still,
so,
does running count as your action? Does that mean if you run up to the dragon and take its turn away, then all it can do is run from you? Or does it mean it can't do
shit? It means
it
can still move its speed. It just can't double move.
Okay.
Because everyone gets a free move.
You got to chase the big fucker.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter. He's just going to move his speed. You move your speed. Mm-hmm. Hit him.
Well, is he faster than
you? You're just going to walk after. Well, it says he can fly at 40 feet around.
It doesn't say what regular players get for speed, so I don't know what that means. I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, the whole can fly at 40 feet around, I don't know if that's an action or just what he can do, because it doesn't give him a land speed at all.
No.
So...
I mean, they make a big deal about how he's a dragon by way of being a snake with wings, so maybe he literally doesn't land.
Maybe. And in that case, it means he's incapable of being beaten, because he's just going to be like, oh, you started the whole freestyle thing. Okay, I'm going to go fly up into the air, and I'm going to wait for this to fall off to the point where I'm out of ear range, and then I'll come back down, have initiative, hit you, and then fly back up.
Yeah.
And this is, instead of it being, we're going to take away all your actions and grind you down and it'll take forever, it's, I'm going to spend forever flying up and down hitting you.
What you need is to go find probably one of the street magician spells. It's like, hey, you can't move now. I froze you in place. There, now we can win. Very slowly.
But that, of course, you can only do 3 times a day.
Uh-huh. So the ideal party is one freestyler and a bunch of wizards. So the rest of the monsters. I guess to finish off the Black Dragon, he just has everything at 3. Like, he has all the skills at 3.
Yeah, but his stats are higher than that. The one problem, and what I was going to mention, is the book goes on and on about how the Black Dragon can summon monsters and do all these things. There's nothing about that in his profile. His only ability is he can cast all of the Dock and Street Magician spells 2 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Which also means he can shut down your freestyler if he goes first.
Yes.
He could be like, all right, I got initiative because I'm the Black Dragon. I'm going to use the spell from the Street Magician that says you lose your next turn, freestyler.
Yeah, but that cost me my action, so then they beat on me, and then it goes to the next round. What do you do then?
That again, I guess. So anyway, yeah, well, honestly, just basically a game that has you lose your next turn as one of its combat abilities, it's a mistake. You know, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, especially when it means you don't do anything, because it's basically, hey, did you want to play optimally? It means you don't get to play. Everyone else does. You just say, hey, he doesn't do anything, and then you sit with your thumb up your ass.
Everyone gives you a high five, but realistically, chances are you're the most important contributor to the fight, but it isn't any fun.
No, you don't do anything. You just say, hey, every round I do this, and I'm going to go.
Yeah. Assume my character does this. Let me know if I die or get cool loot. Okay, so the other monsters.
Now, the next page, literally right after the Black Dragon, is the Crazy Hoe.
The Crazy Hoe is a crazy hoe. Like, straight up. It does make a big deal about how it's equal opportunity, and there are crazy man hoes, too.
Yes. Even the men hoes will scratch up yo shit. Those nails ain't just for looks, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
And the ratings for monsters are chump, gangster, and bad motherfucker. So that's the level range.
And there's a lot of bad motherfuckers. I would have figured it was just the Black Dragon, but no, there's several more of them.
Yeah, I think throughout the whole thing, there's 3?
Yeah, crazy hoes are chumps.
Yes.
They are designed to easily be dispatched, and they are often found in the employ of the pimp snakes.
Pimp snakes are gangster level.
Yeah, and they're basically yuan ti with pimp hats on that control crazy hoes.
Yeah, it's imagine some naga had a fur coat on and a diamond tipped cane, and they can summon crazy hoes.
Yeah, and they have an ability that lets them, their canes have an ability built into them that let them command hoes.
Yeah, they can call up to d6 crazy hoes to their side to aid in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And right after Crazy Ho, once you're shaking that loose, I mean, there's not much to them beyond the name, the pretty bad art.
And their one ability, Take One for Daddy, where they can, if they're within 10 feet of their pimp, they can take damage for the pimp.
Yes.
Great.
Mm. And once you're past that, the next one is the Dragula, which is a drag queen vampire.
Yep. They're hella aggressive and know how to throw down like a big dude with all the fashion sense of a lady. Dragulas survive on a diet of blood and hairspray. Great.
Mm. See, I feel like they didn't quite get too offensive with the Dragula. Like they admit that they're pretty good looking, that they are badass, but you weren't supposed to put it in there. I don't know how to say that right.
There's a lot of things in here where it seems like they went, I saw this in like some 80s film that was, you know, popular for hood culture.
Well, yeah, like I was saying, a lot of this feels like it's just based on Friday or I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, I'll put that in there. But then they realize that they're like, oh, this is probably going to be kind of offensive if we put it in there. Let's treat this with the most kid gloves we can. And at that point, I'm like, yeah, when you realize you probably shouldn't put it in there, don't put it in there.
I'm sure that they were so happy with the concept of Dragula as a name that they were like, well, we can't not do it. Got to go in there. Well, why don't you just make it a cool race car then that digs through ditches and
burns the witches?
Yeah, that's what it should have been.
You also have the Krolem, the Chrome Golem.
Krolem, the Chrome Golem, which sounds like it should be one dude.
Yeah,
but it is not. It is a species of golems that are made of chrome and are reflective.
Yes. You've got floating eyeballs.
Just beholders.
You've got various bandits. You have probably my favorite thing in here, the ghetto leprechaun. reference to the movie Leprechaun in the Hood.
Yeah, with a bit at the end. It's like, who ain't seen that film?
Everybody's seen the leprechaun. Say yeah.
Yeah. It's great. It's a little reference to the leprechaun. There's references to a lot of fun things in here. Like in the NPC list, there's one guy who's clearly the author of this book, Saints Row character. Like, you know how in Saints Row 2, 3 and 4, you had to create the boss and play as him? That he very clearly took his own boss and just put him in as an NPC that's running around in the world. It's a character named Purpleface McGee.
Okay.
It says, you can tell because he's like, oh, this guy was, he was so free-spirited that he was like, fuck the man, I can be whatever color I want. And he permanently dyed his skin purple. Get a load of that shit. Also, he started running a gang called the 4th Street Angels. I was like, oh, that's just your fucking third Street Saints character, isn't it? You named your guy Purpleface McGee.
Let's see. There's Medusafarians, which is great. They used to be the followers of a chill religion that the Black Dragon magicked into having snake dreads.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Their power is turned to stoned.
All right.
You get a -1 to all brains-related rolls and get the munchies.
Yeah, well, there's too much munchies jokes in here, but okay, sure.
There's a lot of Wu-Tang references in here as well. Anytime anything is like athletics, you'll be jumping around like Wu-Tang shit.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
That's barely a Wu-Tang reference.
Yeah. Ninja MCs, they're crazy on the mic and know all that Wu-Tang kung fu shit.
Yeah, just mentioning Wu-Tang is not a really good Wu-Tang reference. If you want it, put in there that there's a gravel pit in the big-ass forest or something. Make some kind of actual joke about what the Wu-Tang do and not just that their name implies kung fu stuff.
Yeah. One of the monsters in here is just pit bulls.
Yeah, they just straight up put pit bulls in there. Well, I mean, half the monsters in this are based on homie figurines, so why not?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
You got some weak-ass goblins and the royal popo.
Mm-hmm. You got the, what are they called? The zombie equivalent in this game.
The undead heads?
Undead heads, which are basically just your meth heads or tweakers that have become slow and unresponsive to the point where they might as well be dead.
Yay.
Yeah. So there you have it. You run around and fight those monsters and acquire fat loots, including some named magic items we didn't go over, but they're pretty simple. There's most of them are just joke versions of D&D magic items. You know, they'll be like, oh, it's the bag of holding yo shit, which is a bag of holding that we, oh, it's bigger on the inside. Your shit always comes back out.
Hey, it's... There's one of the named items is actually in the adventure, which is King Sammy's Cup, which is a big pimp goblet that instantly heals you to full HP twice a day if you drink from it.
Very powerful.
Yeah. In fact, at the end of the adventure, it goes, hey, if you think this is too powerful for your people to have, just give them some other shit. Who cares?
Yeah, who gives a fuck? I mean, that is a very powerful effect. And he constantly used it to sit around the house drinking gin and juice.
Ah, yes.
Indeed. I mean, I shouldn't. Here's the thing. I was just saying I want Wu-Tang song references instead of just mentioning the band's name a bunch of times. So in this case, when they mention Gin and Juice, instead of mentioning the band that performed it, or the group that performed it, I should be giving them some credit. So I will.
Yeah. I mean, that happens a few times, like when they're talking about the like day that King Pemberton took over. They're like, oh, it was a clear black night with a clear white moon. And I'm like, okay, great. You got some Regulators references in there.
Yeah,
good.
Why not? They should have told us his castle had 36 chambers in it. They should have changed the spell that the wizard can cast called Freeze to, I don't know, Funky Cold Medina.
That's... okay. Sure, why not?
How come there isn't an NPC in this game that's a girl named Poison? So there could be a section about how that girl is Poison.
That girl is Poison. Nothing. Not in any of here. That's sort of one of my big problems with this is I was like, you didn't go far enough.
Yeah.
If you were going to do this, don't just make a broken game that you slapped some like lowest common denominator, barely trying jokes onto.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Put some effort in.
That's kind of where I'm at. Like that's my... I'm the least qualified person to judge a game about whether or not it properly hits the marks of celebrating 80s and 90s urban culture. But even I'm like, hey, where's all the stuff I was expecting would be in here?
Yeah, given that so much of this, like we have been saying, seems to come out of, like, blaxploitation films...
It's very I'm gonna get you, sucka. Like, I kept looking for Biggie and Tupac, like East Coast, West Coast sort of, like, controversy stuff, and that's not in there at all.
No, I mean, the closest you even get is an NPC named Huff Daddy.
Yeah, there's a Huff Daddy. I like the other NPC, the one that goes by Dice Bag, and he's like a merchant or something, and everyone calls him D-Bag, and he and also, I did appreciate the one NPC who's the only orc in the kingdom, and why is there one orc? Fuck you, don't worry about it.
Fuck you, I'm an orc, who cares?
Yeah. But yeah, there. I mean, I was just expecting to see if it was going to be based on the topic that the book sets forth on the first page. It's like, hey, this is our paean or our homage to 80s and 90s hip hop culture, because both of us, the author of this book and then the publisher of the book, came up in various kind of ghetto environments, and we want to celebrate that past. I'm like, okay, we'll do it.
Yeah, I was just looking through the NPCs, and I saw one of their various gymnastic things to try and get around the whole, like, oh, we made Pemberton the man,
mm-hmm.
which was adding in Lord Fappington III, who is one of the people who lives on the cul-de-sac and is super into the police.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, but they're not his.
No,
like, they're, as much as he might be like, yes, I want the police to go stop all of these people from the ghetto, he's not in charge of them. He doesn't run them.
I mean, in summation, King Pemberton is the land of contrasts. Every episode.
Every single episode.
I don't know. I mean, the book's fun. Some of the jokes I was appreciative of, I didn't... This book knows how to do a comedy thing. It gets in and it gets out. But I feel like this is a situation where I wanted to see a deeper dive.
Yeah... I mean, for me, I don't think a lot of the stuff really hit. Most of it was just like, let me reference a thing. And I'm like, yeah, this is pimps. I'm like, okay, if you had tried to actually put good references in there, make, you know, instead of just having all the spells be like, freeze, burn, crush, and you turned them into stuff that actually was either songs or references.
Yeah.
Tried to make this feel a little bit more like that, because honestly, I know that the author of this grew up in the projects in Washington.
Yeah, he grew up. I forget specifically where in Washington.
Rainier,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But it honestly feels like someone that was just on the outside looking at hood culture wrote this,
mm-hmm.
because it is the most
surface
top
level, yeah.
like stereotype things you might know about.
Yeah.
That you're like, oh, I have heard the term hood rat. And of course, pimps and hoes. These are things I know. And nothing else made it into game text.
I feel like you just wrote a rap song. I have heard the term hood rat. Pimps and hoes, these are a few of the terms I know.
These are a few of my favorite things.
I understand where the issue lies with that. Like, you can go very deep into urban hip hop culture and go too deep and miss your audience. If you're, because you're selling to an audience of, let's face it, it's going into a D&D audience. It's the people who made this game may be POCs, but the people they're trying to sell it to, largely guys like that look a lot like us. I'm just gonna say they're probably trying to hit a market. I mean, they want the game to sell, which means they can't put in too many references where people are like, I don't know what this is. I have never heard of Grandmaster Flash.
It's a sad part of the market, because I know they kickstarted this, and that's the only reason that this exists.
Yeah, yeah.
And with that, I feel like you could at least get away with doing more in-depth stuff, because you know you already had the market there, and you had the money, and you could put it out.
That's true. Part of the whole Kickstarter thing is you could sell the thing you would like. You can be like, hey, we wanted to finally do a game that really dives deep into this particular slice of life between these years, and then you can tell your listeners, hey, this is going to go deep. This is going to reference people you may not have heard of. This is going to be about the rap game and not just the parts that, like, Snoop Dogg talks about from time to time. Then your audience can be like, hell yeah, that's what we've been wanting the whole time.
Yeah, and I mean, that way you get away from things like the whole, like, police king pimp thing.
Well,
like,
yeah.
You don't have to have that. You could have just made, instead of it being like, oh, it's King Pimperton, you'd be like, oh, no, it's actually the man.
Yeah, yeah. And the other, the pimp stuff in particular, like, notably, your base attack in this game, if you have to swing with just your hand, is called your pimp slap.
Yeah.
And again, we talked about this, I forget when this last came up, but it came up with something we were talking about where, remember when pimps were funny and everyone was like, ha, 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 pimps. Oh, pimps.
Oh, pimps.
And now we're all to the point where we're like, pimps fucking suck. They're like the thing that keeps the sex industry from being safe.
Yeah, no, there was
also men.
There was a point where, mostly because of things like people not really being part of the culture, but seeing stuff like blaxploitation films,
seeing,
like,
Huggy Bear, and
hey, look at that. It's some guy dressed up super ostentatiously. Oh, what a funny clown he is.
What an interesting walk he has developed.
Oh, my. And then once people are like, oh, wait a minute. These are abusive, controlling assholes that
are slave drivers.
Are, like, literally slave drivers.
Yeah, they're abusive, sexual slave drivers. And we're like, haha, they have goldfish in their shoes.
Yeah. And it's why I'm like, you could get away with this maybe if this was written in, like, the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But this was, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I understand. There's not too much a pimp game must be strong type language in this book. And there is that opening thing where it's like, hey, we condemn homophobia. We condemn sexism. I feel like they needed to do more to address that. Pimp snakes are, to be fair, the villains. They're monsters. But also you have the good King Pimperton.
Yeah.
And all the heroes are described as pimps from time to time and attack with pimp slaps and pimp canes.
Yes. So that's,
in summation,
my pimps are too powerful for you, Trevor.
Oh, God. Yeah.
That's right. We're bringing that one back. If you're going to do your shit every episode, I'm going to bring the fucking potion seller back.
Fair enough. All right, John. What would you say is your favorite thing about D and Dizzle?
I would say my favorite thing is, I had mentioned this before, but I really appreciate in any comedy game having a clear separation of rules text and funny joke narration.
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, we were joking around with that earlier, with me saying the freeze spell in this game should be called Funky Cold Medina, but the fact that it's just called freeze is useful, because we've reviewed games before where it's like, I would like to hit that guy. I will roll my swing extra nasty pointy thing skill.
Yeah, I appreciate having a separation of rules and theme text, but also making it so that just on glance you can tell the difference, because the rules text is just basically like Times New Roman, and then all of the, like, in character text looks sort of like it's trying to be in a printed cursive.
Mm-hmm.
So having that available means if I'm trying to find something in the book, I don't have to scan through a bunch of jokes to get to the point where I find the rule.
Yeah, Fat Warrior's dialogue throughout the book is basically found, determined by opening up Word and being like, which font is ye old medievalist? Ah, verily, this one. This one is called block cursive.
So yeah, I would say that decision is my favorite thing in this book. What about you?
Okay, I'm gonna say my favorite thing about in this book is a few of the enemies, that are funny and well thought out. Trying to remember one of the ones I actually appreciated. I like the chrome golems. I liked the zombie deadhead, the deadheaded zombie types.
The undeadhead.
And the Medusafarians.
Yeah.
I thought some of them were okay. Sure, a lot of them are weak or stereotypical, but the Medusafarian in and of itself is a super stereotype, sort of. It's a half of stereotype. But I thought they were fun and clever, and I didn't hate them, and they'd be fun fights for a party.
I mean, at least the Medusafarian, I'm like, you hit on a couple levels, because you're like, hey, you made dreadlocks into snakes, and then you also made it so that, hey, Medusa's turned people to stone.
Yeah, there's two jokes.
You turned it to stone. Well, look, you did more than one thing!
There's more than one joke in there, but then you compare that to the crazy hoe.
And you're like, oh.
What do these guys do? They attack you with their nails. They have a special attack where they can tug your weave.
Thanks.
All right.
They get real angry if they hurt their dick hand.
Yeah. You don't want to try to snatch they weaves. So that's just about a third of the monsters are my favorite part of this book. What would you say is your least favorite thing?
I mean, the worst thing in this book is honestly how slapdash it feels.
Mm, yeah.
For something that at the beginning takes two pages of like writer text saying, this is how I grew up, this is, you know, when I got out I got into gaming and that really meant a lot to me, and I'm trying to blend my two loves and this, and it's this intro to a book where you're like, oh, this is a passion project for someone trying to do this, and then you get in there and it really just looks like someone farted this out over the course of like a week.
Yeah. The problem is, he's like, these are my twin loves. My growing up in the projects and my love of role-playing games. And I really want to honor them both by vaguely referencing Wu-Tang Clan and I'm Gonna Get You Sucka for a couple of pages.
The problem is, you're like, my dude, you're trying to bring these two loves. And for the, like, hood hip-hop side, you're going very base high level nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the role playing side, you have not done any editing or work or anything because this is missing so many rules and references and things that would make an RPG good.
Yeah, and I'll say that that's basically what my least favorite thing about this book is as well, is that there's a kind of like a lack of care. It's teetering between the jokes and the rules, and either side they're using the other side as the excuse. They're like, oh, the book's a joke book, so the rules don't have to really make a lot of sense. Or it's a D&D game, so we don't want to go that deep into the references to hip-hop stuff. And the end result is meh.
Yeah, it's just... it's bland on both counts.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest problem with this, is if you're going to do something, at least make it interesting in some way. You can do it so that it's interesting because you turned this game into a decent game. You've got decent rules. You started out with a 2d6 base that gives you a decent curve to start with. You lowered the numbers down. You really got drilled down to a point where you're like, oh, you could have controlled this math.
Yes.
And you see that, and then it just doesn't do anything with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the same thing, like, you see all of this hip-hop and black culture references, but it doesn't do anything with it.
And it's the simplest
stuff. And it just feels disappointing
stuff.
All over the place.
I mean, it's just pimp cups and pimp canes and stuff. There's nothing super interesting to really get your... Like, I would have loved it if one of the armor suits you could get in this game is, like, Missy Elliott's puffy garbage bag armor suit. That lets you float on water, but unfortunately you can't wear it if it's raining.
Hmm.
That kind of thing would have been rad. So, anyway, there you go. Would you play it? this game?
No.
This game of games?
It feels very much like it would end up being kind of boring. There's not enough for any player to do, even if you were like, oh, we're going to take this setting and do something else with it and really go deep into it. We're going to try and make something cool out of this. The base system has so many problems and so many things missing that you would have to house rule that there's no reason to.
Yeah. But let me ask you a follow-up question. Would you, could you play this game in a limousine? Would you, could you, with Salt and Peppa and Heavy D?
I would, but then it was all a dream.
All right. Well, anyway, check us out in Word Up Magazine. Yeah. No, I would consider playing this as like a convention game. Where I'm willing to kind of loosen up the rules a little bit and let people have fun and throw dumb ideas out because it's only 3 hours and you're never going to see these people again.
I really wouldn't want this to be a con game because that's the kind of shit where you're going to get randoms in there and, ooh, you're going to get a bunch of random white guys that are like, hey, this is my opportunity to say the N-word, right?
Oh, wait, is this a chance for me to say racist things?
Oh, boy.
And even if you were like, oh, I'm going to run this at a convention, I've written a huge list of like references to rap songs and interesting people from that era. And there's a bunch of stuff about like producers and hip hop culture and branding and so on. And then I sit down at my table and everyone's like, what is any of this? I don't like rap or country. And you're like, oh, no. Why did I work so hard? So you really have to know your audience, too. And it's such a tightrope of a walk. You'd have to get to a point where this game is super playable.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I'm like, I wouldn't want to run this as a white person. I wouldn't want to run this for white people at a convention. And honestly, if I was a person of color, I wouldn't want to run this at a convention because also white people would show up and I'd be like, please stop shitting on this.
Yeah, that's
please fair. Stop ruining everything.
That's true. That's true.
I mean,
so.
White people, please stop ruining everything is at least a good mantra to have.
Although I really want to make this clear. This game was made by people of color.
Yeah.
We made that mistake with Haven. I'm not doing that again.
So nervous that you're going to make another mistake. Like
I will
that.
Not make another mistake.
That is D.N. Diesel.
It is in Diesel. Sorry. Hang on. No.
Diesel?
Diesel.
Diesel nuts.
It's in Diesel jeans. Also, Diesel nuts are in Diesel jeans.
It's also Vin Diesel. It's also the Diesel.
One of the things I found surprising to be, there was so much of in this book, is Updog.
That is. It's very surprising that there was that much. Updog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also, just... I was really confused about the character Beauregard.
Who's Beauregard?
Beauregard these nuts.
It's my joke, but I love hearing it.
I know you do. That was just for you.
Thank you. Ligma balls. All right, everyone. That's been System Mastery. What we've got to do before we get out is talk to you about Gen Con, which is coming right up.
Yeah, it's... less than a month now,
mm-hmm.
We'll be at Gen Con. We've got several things that we are doing.
We have several things we're doing. We have three different events, and all three of them still have tickets, although one of them has a single ticket available as of this recording.
That's,
and I'll start with that one because I'm going to keep it short because only one of you is going to get it. If you're going to be at Gen Con and you want to role play in a role playing game that John and I run, which we basically role play one or run one game a year, all you have to do is go to the Gen Con website and register for the System Mastery live game. I forget what it's called. It's called like Random or something. I'll post a link to our Twitter again for you. It's going to be one game from our library, chosen at random. No matter how complicated the rules are, we're going to run to the table. You won't need to know anything. We'll do pre-gens.
What we're going to do is write the adventure mm-hmm. and then randomly determine what thing we're going to run it in.
That's the plan. And if it doesn't make any friggin' sense, oh well, it's going to be a complete and utter shit show, but there's one ticket left.
If we come up with an entire thing that's a noir detective crime thriller and roll Cinnabar, then by God, Live Emotion is definitely going to figure out who done it.
They're going to have to solve a mystery, will that band of winged warriors? No, but we're going to figure it out. And I guarantee you, last year we ran a strike game, and it was the only strike game at the entire Gen Con. This year I'm going to try and do it again. If I could be the only person at Gen Con running a game, that makes me happy.
Oh, yeah. It is definitely you know, outside of everyone running Pathfinder and D&D and PBTA, you will find us running some weird nonsense.
Yeah, no idea what it's going to be. Will it be Raven Star, Silhouette Rouge? Who knows? Oh, Numenon, that's what that game's actually
called. Yeah, you always call it the Silhouette Rouge.
Which is just the house that the game takes place in.
I don't know.
I have no idea what it's going to be. Promised Sands?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Could be that Bible RPG?
Oh, yeah. Testament D20. Could be Fifth Cycle. We have no idea.
None.
And I don't know why we're selling this so hard, because there's only one ticket left.
I know.
Otherwise, we have two other shows we're doing. A live System Mastery episode. We'll be reviewing WWE's D20 Know Your Role, the wrestling role-playing game.
Yep. If you want to basically sit around and listen to us talk at length about wrestling and role-playing games at the same time, then boy howdy do I have something for you.
Not only that, but our special guest is in his own right an amateur, soon to be turned professional wrestler. We managed to load one of those guys up for this sort of thing.
Yay.
So we're gonna be dressing up in wrestle costumes and just having a fucking good time talking wrestles.
Hell yeah.
So that's just called System Mastery Live. Easy to find. Plenty of tickets left. Go get yourself a ticket to it. Last but not least, Quizdom Mastery. This is something new we're trying. This is going to be the inaugural event of it. We're hoping it goes well and we can do it again and make it bigger and better every year. But we need your help to do that. It's a big fat quiz style panel quiz show done live. We'll have a bunch of podcasters for the hosts, the panelists on the quiz. We're going to ask them insane old D&D and RPG questions. We'll play a couple of special guest videos, and it's all just going to be laughy and goofy.
Surprises, laughs, and all the proceeds go to charity.
Yeah, they all go to Trans Lifeline. So that's just our way of kind of giving back to a community that needs help. And in order to do that, though, there need to be proceeds. So if you're going to be at Gen Con, look up the event Quizdom Mastery and stop on by. It's going to be a really good time. So show up and say hello.
Indeed.
Otherwise, go to Patreon and give us a dollar. There you go. That's the Patreon pitch. Patreon.com/System Mastery.
Yep. We're going to make characters in D&Dizzle.
We're going to make bonus content characters, and you can get them if you're at the dollar support level. All right, folks. You can find us on Twitter, Gmail, Facebook, Reddit. We're all System Mastery. You can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com or Patreon.com/System Mastery. Like what we do. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good week.